Red, White, and Blue Murder by Jean M. Dams. Copyright 2000 by Jean M. Dams. This recording of the full-length reading of Red, White, and Blue Murder was published by arrangement with Jean M. Dams and was produced in 2000 by Books on Tape, Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape, Incorporated. This book is read by Kate Redding. Red, White, and Blue Murder by Jean M. Dams. This book consists of 27 chapters and is 191 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. Hilda Johansson knows full well that she's a maid, an employee whose demeanor and habits are pretty well dictated by her position. There's nothing surprising about that. Hilda is an immigrant in America in the early 1900s, seeking the American dream, and she does what she can not to upset her apple cart. But she's an independent woman, intelligent, caring, and unwilling to accept "because I say so" as a valid response to any question, even if that attitude means that everyone suddenly seems arrayed against her. And that's what has just happened. The Studebaker household is in turmoil. The news that President McKinley has been assassinated is more than anyone can bear. Worse still is the reaction of the coachman, John Bolton. His sympathies lie with the anarchists, and his reaction to the name of the president's murderer catches Hilda Johansson's eye and her imagination. South Bend, Indiana, home of Notre Dame University, is not a hotbed of anarchist activity, but something is clearly going on, and in spite of orders to mind her own business, Hilda sets out to discover exactly what is happening, no matter what it might cost her. Recreating a time and place with a perfect eye and ear for period detail, Jean M. Dams succeeds not only in transporting us to the heartland of yesteryear, but in creating a perfect puzzle and intriguing what-if. Combining charm, pace, and brilliant sleuthing, the Hilda Johansson novels are everything a traditional mystery fan desires for criminous entertainment. Jean M. Dams lives in South Bend, Indiana, the setting of the Hilda Johansson mysteries. The sixth novel in her Agatha Award-winning Dorothy Martin series, A Bequest Back Home, will be published by Walker & Company in fall 2000. Red, White, and Blue Murder, A Hilda Johansson Mystery, by Jean M. Dams. Preface. In this account of real historical events mixed with fictional ones, I have quoted freely from newspapers. I have sometimes, however, added a few words pertaining to the fictional side of the story. All quotations directly related to the health of President McKinley are verbatim. I have arranged the weather to suit myself. Life is well known for its habit of imitating art. I did not know, until I was well into the writing of this book, that the assassin Leon Czolgosz did in fact visit South Bend shortly before he shot President McKinley. What had seemed a useful fictional device suddenly became reality, to the considerable surprise of the author. I have no idea what he really did here, nor whom he met, since those who saw him were, as the South Bend Tribune said, understandably reluctant to have their names in the newspaper. Therefore, the actions attributed to him within the pages of this book are, save for the assassination itself, entirely the product of my imagination. If something similar took place in real life, it is, I hope and trust, not my fault. On the other hand, all actions and quotations attributed to Emma Goldman, one of America's most notable anarchists, are authentic. To my knowledge, she was never in South Bend. I have tried to write with the attitudes that prevailed during the period in which the story takes place. Thus, there are unflattering references to foreigners, immigrants, and the like, which are not meant to reflect my attitudes, nor those of the residents of today's South Bend, who every year celebrate a massive ethnic festival, taking joyous note of the diversity of our city, especially its food. I have not, in my research, met with any indication that the first Studebaker automobile trial was kept a secret. On the other hand, neither have I seen any extensive early publicity. So, with the freedom afforded the writer of fiction, I chose the option that made the better story. Another of my storylines, the hint of labor problems at the Studebaker factory, is made up out of whole cloth. The policies and attitudes of the Studebaker brothers kept their business remarkably free of labor conflicts, with one minor exception in 1893, until a much later period than the one with which I am concerned. A time, indeed, when all the brothers were dead, and their principles no longer governed the company they had founded. The real contractor for the new City Hall, which really was built by James Oliver, was one H.G. Christman, whose firm is still esteemed in South Bend. There were, so far as I know, no untoward incidents during the construction of the building, and certainly no hint of scandal has ever accrued to Christman. City Hall, once completed, was a handsome Romanesque building that served South Bend well until it was, with utter disregard for its historical and architectural significance, torn down in the 1970s. Red, White, and Blue Murder. 1. Mrs. Clem Studebaker gave a luncheon at her home, Tippecanoe Place, Saturday afternoon. There were 27 ladies present, and luncheon was served in the dining room. The table decorations were beautiful. South Bend Tribune, January 1, 1900, page 1. Hilda, that stifling August evening, was both rushed off her feet and bored out of her mind. "Talk, talk, talk," she grumbled to Nora as they whisked back to the butler's pantry for dessert plates. "If they have nothing to say, why do they not remain silent?" "You're just grumpy. You always get grumpy when it's hot." Nora sniffed and handed Hilda a stack of plates. "A fine sort of dinner party that'd be, with all of 'em sitting around saying nothing. Here, them are the mason. Mind you don't drop 'em." It was a small party, as Tippecanoe Place parties went, easily contained in the family dining room. Only 8 couples shared the table with Colonel and Mrs. George Studebaker, nearly all, Hilda knew, connected by business ties with Studebaker Brothers Manufacturing. It would, in Hilda's opinion, have been much wiser for her employers to work off their business obligations with a larger party. Not that anyone would be interested in the opinions of the housemaid, but she knew just as well as the Studebakers that large dinners allowed for an interesting mix of guests at each table. With only 18 people sitting around a single table, the possibility for devastating boredom was much greater. The host and hostess were doing their best. Mrs. George had, with Mrs. Sullivan the cook, planned an elaborate menu, much of it to be served chilled, in deference to the sweltering August weather. She had also taken great care to seat her guests so as to separate those with any of the little animosities business can so easily generate. Now she and Colonel George were trying hard to keep the conversation going, but it was uphill work. As Hilda set out the dessert plates, she amused herself by studying the guests. How surprised they would be if they realized how much the unregarded servants knew about them. Mrs. Avery, for example, a frequent guest seated to Colonel George's right, was a flirt and a social climber. Dressed in her Paris gown and her diamonds more for a ball than a simple dinner, she was by far the most attractive woman in the room. And she knew it, thought Hilda, as she set the fragile plate in front of her. At 25 or so, she was also by several years the youngest woman present, and seemed determined to conquer every man in the room. No matter what Colonel George or Mr. Coates, her other dinner partner, said to her, she batted her eyelashes and laughed. It was a very feminine, high, tinkly laugh, and Hilda was beginning to be very tired of it. Her husband, Mr. Avery, a well-to-do lumber dealer and a much older man, might have been able to keep her quiet, but since the Averys were the principal guests, he was, of course, seated at the other end of the table at his hostess's right hand. A pity husbands and wives couldn't sit together, for Mr. Avery knew how to behave at a dinner party. He smiled, he spoke courteously to his hostess and others near him, he was gallant with all the ladies, he even smiled at the servants. He kept up a light banter of conversation, insubstantial, perhaps, but pleasant. Hilda knew that Mr. Avery liked money, perhaps a little more than he should, but she approved of him. Mr. Coates, the attorney seated next to Mrs. Avery, was no use at all. His manner was as dry as the legal documents he dealt with for the Studebakers. He spoke when spoken to, offered a comment or two on the weather,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?